What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and as you already know, you're rocking out here with me live on Philly Fridays on Fet Life Station, FetLifeStation.com. You can also catch us on all your favorite streaming networks. At the True Stories Podcast Network, the True Stories Podcast Network. We can also catch us pulling up. And as I always tell you, hold on. You can't leave. You're locking down right here with me as we make this thing pop. And one of the things that one of the things that's been going on, man, is this daggone war that's taking place over here. And, you know, I wanted to just update y'all on some of the things that's been happening. So, let me just take y'all to, first we're going to start off with the war report. And, and then y'all want to get to see some internal beef going on in the MAGA camp, as it's been called. So hold on, hold tight, y'all. Check this out.
There are signs this morning the war in Iran could be winding down.
President Trump is floating a possible exit timeline. He's expected to give an update in a primetime address today.
But with new threats and rising gas prices, questions remain. ABC's Olivia Rubin is in Washington with the latest.
This morning, President Trump with this new timeline to end the war in Iran.
I would say that within 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, maybe three, we're hitting them very hard. I think with 2 or 3 weeks, we'll leave.
In an apparent reversal, Trump saying the U.S. is prepared to leave Iran, even if the Strait of Hormuz is still closed to most ships.
We'll be leaving very soon. And if France or some other country wants to get oil or gas, they'll go up through the strait and the Hormuz Strait. They'll go right up there and they'll be able to fend for themselves.
Iran's president also suggesting the end is in sight, saying we possess the necessary will to end this conflict, while calling for security guarantees. It comes after the U.S. attacked an Iranian military complex using multiple 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs. The Pentagon saying B-52 bombers are now flying deep into Iran, a sign that Iranian anti-aircraft systems are severely weakened. And more than a month into this conflict, Secretary of State Marco Rubio putting a video explaining why the administration decided to go to war, still trying to make the case to the American people.
Many Americans are asking, why did the United States have to attack Iran now? Well, let me explain. Iran wants to have nuclear weapons. Of that, there is zero doubt.
Well, check this out. Hold on.
Despite that progress, Iranian officials now threatening to target American companies in the Middle East. And right here at home, gas prices still rising, though President Trump insists they will come back down when the war is over. Olivia Rubin, ABC News, Washington.
And so, and I just want to be clear about something. That little pause or whatever, that was them. That was not me. All right? That was them. All right? But I want to be clear about something else, too. All right? Because, first of all, they're not being totally truthful about some of the ongoings in America. You really can't believe the Boynton paid for Western Press these days. So you have to get your news from alternative sources. So I would indulge all of you to do your due diligence to find a news source that's pretty down the middle. So, and the benefit you have now that I didn't have years ago, 20-something years ago, this, that, and the other, is a lot of this stuff is available via YouTube. But just be careful, because they have a lot of AI reports going on right now. And a lot of it is just more propaganda. I'll tell you like this. The war is not going well for the American / Israel team. You know, as they can say, Iran is dropping bombs on them cats. And they still can't get any ships through the Straits of Hormuz, which is a very important waterway when it comes to not just the transfer of oil, liquid gasoline that we put in our cars, diesel fuel, things of that nature. But there's also, you know, a lot of other things, helium, and is what comes to mind, and a lot of other important chemicals go through the Straits of Hormuz, and places like Taiwan, which makes the superconductor microchips that are used in a lot of our smart devices. I mean, think about when they had that holdup of cars, new cars. You couldn't buy a new car over the last few years before they caught up with it. That was because there was a hold on the semiconductor microchips that were being built in Taiwan. So now you can imagine that, you know, they're a month behind schedule. And beyond that, you know, you have countries that are all out of petrol. You have countries that people are beating or fighting each other at the, you know, people are fighting each other at the pump. You know, you go to India, what is it, India? Yeah, you know, they, long lines of people, you know, with gas containers. You got countries like Australia that are running out of gas and running out of oil. Japan, South Korea. These are countries that are, you know, import dependent. You know, they don't export, or they don't produce their own oil. Not only that, you know, you talk about the global monopoly on fertilizer. That's something that in this time of the year is really important to those countries that are facing, because this right now, this is the season for planting crops in the northern hemisphere. The south and the northern hemispheres are different. So when it's summer up here, it's winter down there. When it's spring up here, it's autumn down there, and vice versa. So the seasons kind of like, they're the opposites. So in the southern hemisphere, it's currently the winter months, you know, or the fall month leading to the winter. Up here is spring leading to the summer. And one of the problems with that is you don't know exactly the total effects of all this until it comes time to see the crops, you know. And we're in the process right now where the globe right now is facing stagflation and a possible recession. If this thing doesn't get cleared up in the next few weeks. And like I said, man, these cats ain't winning. Yeah, they're bombing the hell out of Tehran. They're bombing the hell out of Iran. But it's not slowed down Iran's capacity to drop bombs on everybody over there. And Iran is playing a game where anybody can get it. Oh, the Emirates, y'all want to play? Okay, bam. There you go. Now let's see how many of y'all want to go to Dubai that they're hitting them hotel rooms up. You know, all these places that have U.S. bases over there with grounds, with these expensive satellite arrays that cost upwards of $1.5 billion to $1 billion. They have destroyed damn near all of that. All of those things. America's back to the U-2 shit. They're like back to flying those military planes, those military radar jets all over, you know, the entire battlefield or the space of the theater, as they call it. Because there's no eyes on any of the stuff and they need to be able to coordinate their defenses. It's crazy work. Russia is benefiting, you know, making $200 million a day off of this here, because now their gas prices, their oil prices have gone up because they're a producer of oil and their oil is allowed to go through the straits. This is going to have a major impact, mostly on European countries. European countries, this is mostly going to have an impact on them because there's no resources in Europe. There's no resources in Europe, so they're going to be struggling out there. But let me tell you something about like how petty things are back here. And this is how you could tell that we are not in the theater where the war is actually happening. Check. I want y'all listen to this little quick back and forth. This is a clip from The Daily Show, right? Hold on. Where is it at? Check this out, man. Y'all won't believe how petty shit can get. Listen to this. These pundits.
This split is dividing the entire MAGA movement right now. There's the anti-war side with people like Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson, and Megyn Kelly. And there's the pro-war side with Sean Hannity, Lindsey Graham, and Mark Levin. And as you can imagine, the quality of an internal MAGA debate is highly intellectual.
On the X platform, Mark Levin posted, "Poor Megyn Kelly, an emotionally unhinged, lewd, and petulant wreck. She's completely revealed and destroyed herself." In response, Megyn Kelly posted, "Micropenis Mark thinks he has the monopoly on lewd. He doesn't like it when women like me fight back because of his micropenis."
Oh. 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 Feels like I'm bad at the Oxford Debate Club. Be it resolved that dick be tiny. Now, it's not a good look for President Trump to have his followers fighting so publicly over their micropenises. Donnie, why don't you step in and heal the divide?
President Trump defended Mark Levin, posting that he is somewhat under siege by other people with far less intellect, capability, and love for our country. Mark is tough, strong, and brilliant. In response, Megyn Kelly posted that Mark Levin went running to daddy about his micropenis.
Damn it, Megyn! Now, it's obviously not fair to accuse Mark Levin of running to daddy about his micropenis. Although I imagine having a micropenis makes the running a lot easier. Totally unrelated, but in high school, I was the slowest guy in gym class.
Yeah, hold on. And I want to... And at this time, I want to give black women a formal apology that, you know, those penis jokes, those are usually attributed to black women who are trying to insult the brothers. And I always said that you only hear black women saying those types of things. But considering the fact that Megyn Kelly is about as white as they can get, you know. Going after Mark Levin,
you know, is hilarious to me. But the wild part about it is, you know, there's a large faction of, you know, a lot of these people who don't agree with the whole notion of this war. I'm one of them. I'm not a MAGA or a Trump supporter, but I definitely didn't agree with this whole notion of going over there to take on this war effort, you know, for as a Zionist proxy. Let's just call it what it is. You know, this is basically the expansion of white supremacy, and the stuff that's been going on. I guess you don't get in trouble for talking about Israel. There was a time when, man, your channel might get yanked if you was talking about Israel on YouTube, or your page would get sanctioned for like 30 days on Facebook. But I guess we're over those times now, huh? You know, it kind of reminds me of when you had the fall of the Italian mafia, and they sent Rudy Giuliani in there to clean up the mafia. The FBI finally had to acknowledge the mafia existed. I think J. Edgar Hoover probably was already gone by then. They didn't have to worry about his, his infamous footage leaking concerning what happened in that hotel room in New York, which was one of the major reasons why the mafia, the FBI, denied the existence of the mafia for 50 years. Look that up if y'all need help. But I want to also talk about some other things too, right? Because, you know, I really want to focus on, well, let me get to something else first. First, let me just talk about this, right? Because this is something that's crazy to me, but this is just the reality of what we live in. And so there was a concert not too long ago, a couple days ago, I would imagine. I don't know if it was a couple days ago or if it was a while ago, because, you know, where a married woman kisses Chris Brown, the R&B pop performer, on stage in front of her husband. That's just wild turkey, right? And in the crowd, and, you know, and you could see, like, the dude was destroyed. He was there, you know, and I'm just telling you right now, that could not have been I. I think, fellas, if you want to take a litmus test of your relationship, take your woman to a Chris Brown concert or Usher concert and see her reaction. Get close to the front. And if she allows him to serenade, don't even let her hit the stage before you hit the door. That's it. It's over. All right. So let me read some of the comments. So one comment said, this is the definition of risking it all. And then you have some of the ladies saying she ain't wrong. LMAOOOO. You know, so I don't even like Chris. Wish I don't like Chris for real, but I'm trying to read some of the language, y'all. So I don't like Chris for real, and I be all up in that. And it's like, you know, there's just a lot more of unhinged behavior. This speaks to a climate and society where the standards of modernism has taken over. The looseness, the loose behavior is just out the gate. You have, the Jezebel spirit is running wild. I mean, I'm trying to find a polite way to say it, but it's hard to speak on it. When you have, like, people in the audience and in the comment sections of these posts, and this is a post on Facebook, we have people in the comment section defending this rhetoric and defending this type of behavior. Not only defending it, but talking about they would do it too, and whatever happens, happens after the fact. You know, there's no such thing as the sanctity of marriage anymore. And it's over. What's the point of getting married at this point if this is the mindset of the majority of the women? And see, the one thing about social media is people sort of really speak. People say, oh, that's just on social media. No. People really believe that, like, people don't have the filter on social media that they would have to have in person. When you have to actually, you know, for all intended purposes, we don't even know if these are the people's real names, profiles or whatever. But you do get the real results. And I'm for one, don't believe these are all bots. All right, I don't believe that these are all AI accounts. I believe what somebody said, the marriage don't stop nobody. You know, somebody said Chris Brown's not fine enough to me doing all that. But what if he was fine enough? You see what I'm saying? Excuse me. Now, yeah, some people that say thirsty. Thought that kiss was going to bid for be a $1 million meal ticket. You know, imagine how many people threw themselves at him. But you know, it's just, you know. And then we everything now is on display. Everything is caught on camera. You know, of course, the cameraman caught not just her, but caught the disgust that was on the face of the man. And you know, it's like, see, some people are saying it's no big deal. And if you saw the video, you would see Chris Brown wasn't even trying. He wasn't really that into it. And she was the one that savored every moment of that particular kiss. Reaching and grabbing and clutching for more. So it was out of pocket. You know, her man was in the crowd like,
what more do you want from me?
I'd have been out of there, B. Because I'm like this right here.
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
And I don't take any levels of disrespect. But I want to really speak on, fellas. I want to go back to some things that we need to be dealing with. Because that's respect and disrespect on a level that a lot of us shouldn't have to handle, right? And this is why, right? And I'm going to say shout out to this sister. She used to be one of the ones that they were calling, the queens of whatever, you know, what's the lady, Princella? Listen to what Princella has to say. About them dealing with the modern women. All right, listen to what she has to say.
There is a pattern. Every woman coach who seeks out to help women, leader or teacher or coach who focuses on women, they all quit on women. There's a reason for that, and that ain't got nothing to do with men. They got everything to do with the women. More than anybody, it's the women who want to stay where they at. Women are the upholders and the facilitators of the patriarchy that they complain about.
Yeah, and that was Princella. Princella used to be the champion of challenging the so-called patriarchy, challenging men, until she dated a woman. And when she dated a woman, she had a whole flip. Her whole everything turned around, right? Everything turned around. So, you know, but fellas, like I said, man, I want us to talk because I have some things we need to work on, right? Hold on. I got one more before I get to us, because we're going to get on this, fellas. All right. This is a sister. I don't even know who this sister is. But I think she was on the show called Eight at the Table. So, as far as I know, she might be a comedian or something. I don't know. I don't know who this woman is, but I want you to listen to what she's saying about, modern women. Check this out.
I don't care how you want to tell yourself that we got to have our hot girl summer. We got to do what we want to do. It's cute until you see all your other friends around you getting married. You see everybody's life is growing into a direction that you're still in the club at 38, 35. You're still in the club and you're saying, damn, you done been in every body baby shower and you done been 12 bridesmaids and no ring is coming. So this is, you know, and it's unfortunate that I got to say that, but this is what happened. And that dress is expensive.
You start rejecting the bridesmaids offers.
Girl, I got so many bridesmaid dresses before I got my ring. So it's not fun. So my thing is that, you know, don't play with your young years. Those are your best years. Yes. And also as you get older, it's great years too in a different way. But don't play with your young years. If you're going to waste your time just being a hot girl, sleeping with him and him and him, you know, and to each his own, to each his own, no judgment here. But I'm just saying that you have to consider your years. And you can't expect a man to see you running for Miami every year, you in Dubai, you doing every single thing that give nothing as wife material and then expect to be married.
You can't go to Dubai.
Can't expect that. You can go to Dubai and get pissed on if you want to.
Oh, wow.
What?
Wait.
That's what they do.
Hold on.
You can do whatever you want.
Wait, Dubai getting pissed on.
That's not every situation, but I'm just saying, everyone have different things that they're doing in their lives, right?
What's the correlation there?
You don't know the correlation?
That's
about the pissing?
There's a narrative that women are flying over there and being urinated on.
Oh, there's no narrative. That is reality. That is a reality. I'm not sure how much of reality is right now, because ain't nobody going to Dubai right now. But that was a reality. I mean,
man, it's wild turkey out here.
All right, I'm gonna let y'all hear the rest of it.
On for a hefty bag.
A hefty bag.
I actually just saw. Well, really? That's because you're young.
Wow. Aww. I knew you were going to say that.
It ain't
because
you're young. It's her age going over there.
No, they've been going over there before I was her age, they was over there.
No, but I'm just saying that, you know, so young women have to consider themselves. They have to think about their time. Whether y'all want to tell yourself y'all got time, there is no time. The time is to develop your career, develop yourself, and that's cute. But if you come from a family and you looking to want to get married and have children, if you take your whole youth and you in the club drinking liquor, smoking hookah, nothing is wrong with doing that, ladies. I'm not judging y'all. But if that is your whole agenda from 21 to 35, don't be mad if that man don't see you as a marriage material. That's just it.
Yeah, and she had me until that last part of I don't judge, because then we're back on this bullshit.
We listen and we don't judge.
She had me before she got there, you know, because let's be honest about something. Everything she did, she undid by saying, I'm not going to judge you by that. And I remember distinctively a few years ago when Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B came out with the song WAP. And Megan Thee Stallion had an interview with Maxine Waters, you know, Auntie Maxine. She don't play, you know, everybody loves Auntie Maxine. And she's a representative out there in California. And when they brought up the song and Maxine Waters was talking about it, you can see the cringe look on Meg Thee Stallion's face. Because she knew that she should have been judged. An elder should have told her about herself at that particular moment. But that elder went off and said, I felt so empowered. I felt so empowered by, you know, that. You know, and it reminds me of this.
I'm going to be honest. Why when women say I'm living my best life, they always go and do some ho shit? Why is the best you could do is be a slut?
And that's really what I got from that. What is empowering about that? About being free with your body? You know, and let's be clear about something. I don't endorse it when men do it. If you've listened to me, I've often talked about penis discipline with the men. You know, being very, very protective of your seed as a man. You don't, everybody don't deserve it, right? And that's why you had people at the Houston Rodeo or whatever they had down there in Houston, and like 75% of the people that went down there came back testing positive for some type of sexually transmitted disease because of how loose people are, and they don't want to be accountable for anything. So fellas, but she gave decent advice in terms of not wasting the 20s, and I mean, ladies, she gave good advice on that. Stop. And I don't know why people feel like they gotta soften the message for women. If I was a woman, I'd be insulted, because basically you're saying you can't talk to a woman like she's an adult. And it's like, no, it's just the way you say it. If I gotta phrase it like I'm talking to a child, it's because I can't talk to you like an adult. And a lot of times it's not how you say it, it's typically what you say that women don't want to be accountable for. So I got this, because fellas, I told y'all, man, we bringing it back home. And I want y'all to really take heed to what's happening here, because we have got to get on the game, you know, our political education and understanding where we are in the world, right? We really do have to get on the game. So there's an interview that has taken place, and where in the hell is the time? Okay. In the interview is about the rapper from Los Angeles. His name was Razz Kazz. And anybody know back in the 90s, Razz Kazz, boy, there was a time Razz Kazz was keeping up with Nas with those, you know, superlatives and, you know, and wordplay. So he didn't necessarily catch on like Nas, but Razz Kazz was pretty good, pretty nice. Listen to him on his podcast. I believe it's called the Bag Fuel. Check this out real quick, because this is a very important discussion that is way past due.
Bag Fuel, baby.
Does that affect you mentally when you was growing up?
Honestly, no.
Maybe you didn't know it?
Out of bounds. So all I knew was out of bounds. So don't go don't go over there, right? So J-Rock is from Jordan Downs, I believe, from TDE. And I'm older than J-Rock. Mm-hmm. And salute to TDE, period, Top and all of them. Really good people. But when we was younger, because I grew up in a Crip neighborhood. I grew up on 99th and Wadsworth. So basically, even the dude from G-Unit, Spider Loke. So me, I'm a little older than Spider. I grew up with his older brother, Martell, who's Spider, too. So long story short.
Two Spider, okay.
Of course. And then older brother.
And there's an older Spider,
little
too.
Little Spider, right. He's Spider. Right, exactly. So
it's kind of like how George Ford. Right. Yo, for me to have been going out there for all these years and not understand it, that's why I've been going out there since 99, and I'm still learning about the policies just in L.A.
Yeah.
California.
But we used to ride our, like, this one summer, we were riding our bikes. I lived in Carson, but went to school in Watts. My grandmother's house was over there, so I went to school in Watts up until, like, middle of seventh grade. So whatever, this one summer, we riding our bikes, and it's one street by this park. They're like, don't go east of this park. And it's like five of us. It's like five of us. I don't think I ever told J-Rock this one. But anyway, but he would have been younger. So anyway, we decided to go
over there
further, because we're going to basically take this street and go up and then go to my city, which is like a couple of cities over. We're going to ride our bikes. We would do it and then come back down Avalon. This time, I think we would take Central, but they would tell us, no, I forgot what the next street over was. We're like, hey, let's go over this way. And we rode the bikes and got up out of Georgia. And I remember it was a whole bunch of across the street. It's like a big street. And you see these big G they just all on the porch, man. It was weird. In recollection now, they're like, this is like, it was a, but you know, when you like 13 or 12, like, y'all niggas look like monsters. Like, look, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, who is them grown angry men? Yeah. But they didn't do nothing to us. They just pointed and a whole 50 little animals came and ran. Yeah.
What?
And I put this on my mama. If I'm lying or flying, I remember this. I don't know if it was 50, but it was a lot of them. It was like five of us, and they're like 20, 25 little niggas running across the street. And
trying to get y'all.
We trying to go.
Don't tell me one of them was J-Rock.
No, I know.
He said he don't know. It could have been J-Rock.
Because they just knew we was out of bounds.
Because y'all not from here. No, don't come over here. Right. So if I don't know your face.
So the assumption is them from the other side anyway.
Yeah, get them.
The old niggas wasn't going to be there. They just sending the little BGs at the time. They like, go fuck them niggas up.
Yeah.
Go get them little niggas. Them niggas can't.
And this is the part I wouldn't really interject that, right? Because this is what I'm talking about when I say we don't really have an understanding of political education. So when you go back into the history of gangs, right? Whether you're talking about the Vice Lords, the Gangster Disciples, and the Black Gangster Disciples who eventually split in Chicago, when you start talking about all the different gangs all around the country, the majority of those gangs, you know, they started, most of them, especially the ones that were widespread throughout their communities, they started because of the abuse and the threat to Black lives by law enforcement, by Irish, Italian, Polish, Jewish gangs and things of that nature. They pretty much, you know, came together to protect the neighborhood, to protect the community. And now you have situations and circumstances where it ain't just now. And it's been like this for the last 50 years, unfortunately, longer than that in some places, where the dynamics have changed to the point where now they see each other as the op. And in addition to seeing each other as the op, now all of a sudden it's about protecting streets that you don't own. Most people may, if they're lucky, they own the house they live in. But some people don't even own their neighborhoods. They don't own that block that they walk down, that they hang on, this, that, and the other. They have nothing to do with that. You know, they just live there and they claim it territorially. You know, but unfortunately, you can claim the territory, but do you have any municipal power in those territories? And we don't. I'm going to let them keep on.
He's booking it. One of the homies got his bike. I'll tell the truth. We had switched bikes. I had the homies Beach Cruiser. I had a red and chrome Huffy.
Yeah.
And I remember they trying to get to us. We trying to get out of there. Luckily, the traffic kind of slowed them up and whatever. But they got to like damn near me. I'm like, give me the bike. You know what I'm saying? Right. I'm like, Dad, I'm out. My bike. Blood, give me. Whatever. They got it. It's my bike. That was my bike. Mm-hmm. Take the you know, red and chrome. It wasn't no mongoose, but it was fresh. So I had my red and chrome Huffy. Like, blood, that shit. Got him. Yeah. He running. We escaped. He got back to our neighborhood, right? He's like, man, you know, they got your bike. I was like, they got your bike.
What did you talk about?
But on some kids, that was a culture. So, I mean, it didn't really, I don't think it would traumatize us. We just understood. You know what I'm saying? So we never went over there. Black people be having trauma,
and it's regular to us. This is the problem. We be going through trauma.
Rationalizing the trauma?
Yeah, we be going through trauma.
They try to rob you. That's really
in your neighborhood. Like,
no, we were out of bounds. No. They told us better. Nah. They told us better. We went.
Still don't harass you.
Ever.
And I'm glad he stopped that, man, because so many times we try to legitimize the harm that we go through. We try to legitimize the traumatic situations we upheld. We normalize dysfunction. It's not normal for somebody to chase you home just because you live on a different part of the street, a different part of the neighborhood, a different part of the community. It's not normal. It's not normal. And he's going to get to something else in terms of, like, the local politicking And it's something that's so ingrained right now that I don't even know how you can talk to anybody and actually get them to see how just how chaotic and how, as I can't think of a better word, but how dysfunctional the situation and condition is.
Ever. I'm not going to open it unless so invited.
Unless invited.
Yeah, unless invited.
Yo, P, come over here, P.
You know what I'm saying? I wanted to go for the, what you call them?
What does P stand for when they be like, what's up, P?
P, probably Pyro. Yeah.
Yo, so he can't be calling me P.
Or like a lot of blood.
If they are Pyro, they can just say, yo, P, they just call me P, although I'm not a
gangster. Love, yeah.
Oh, all right.
But most times people like, you know, Chris gonna say low. Most people have tails. Just like I can kind of tell. I can tell a Harlem from a Queens, from a Brooklyn. Slang is different. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I definitely can tell a Jersey from a New York. They stick out like a sore thumb. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you know, it just
I'm laughing because
the slang is different. But
it's good hearing it from somebody else because if we said it, Jersey would be like, "What the fuck you mean we stick out like a sore thumb?" They would look at.
I mean, think about Philly. That Joan. You know what I'm saying?
They talk differently. They sound differently, yeah. Sonically.
So imagine this. Y'all got five boroughs and a lot of neighborhoods within that. But what I try to explain to people is L.A. is like New York, but we got like 50-something boroughs. Mm. That's what people
that's
don't
the
understand.
That's the issue.
Yeah, yeah. So y'all, there's a sophistication between Inglewood and Compton. And then the Compton is separated. There's Crip Hub City is what they call that. You know what I'm saying? It's just... And
let me tell you something about that, because, you know, and I'm okay with hood politics. I'm okay with people protecting their block. So when I was speaking earlier, I'm not talking about people protecting their block. I'm talking about people out here becoming menaces to society, their society, where they're not helping to create, maintain, or build anything on their block, where they're not trying to build in the lot. And a lot, you'll find out a lot of these gangs, they didn't start off enemies like this. Typically, they had some type of run-in, and the majority of these cats have run-ins over women. These cats, a lot of their gang leaders started major league beefs between different parts of their communities, and then their particular couple blocks and the other person's couple blocks, now they warring because these two dudes went and got into it over a woman. I'm not bullshitting. Look it up. It ain't even like designated to Los Angeles. It happened in Chicago. It happens in Philly. It happens everywhere. And this is one of the major league problems. You know, we laugh at like the story of Helena Troy. Excuse me. When you have a whole kingdom in Greece and they have the Peloponnesian War between Troy and Greece. Over this chick, this is where the whole term Achilles heel comes from, because the warrior, the Greek warrior Achilles, was allegedly struck by an arrow in the heel of his foot during that last battle after, after they came up on, with the Trojan came through on the Trojan horse. Man, I'm trying to tell y'all, man, a lot of this stuff, a lot of cats is in jail right now because of the affections of women. And these women, that they don't, you know, you've been hearing the what I've been talking about. They don't have the scruples. There's no shame involved anymore. You know, they have the whole concept where we listen, but we don't judge. And they're free to move amongst us however they do. But you need to ask yourself some questions like, you know, a lot of y'all spiritual, go back and read your religious books and let them tell you about the spirit and the spirit of some of the way the women moved historically, religiously, spiritually throughout those tales and times. I'm just trying to tell you. And I ain't, you know, it's not even a hatred towards women thing. This is something that if we can't have real conversations, then why are we having them? Because I don't pander. You know, panderers are the worst. My opinion, panderers make society a worse place because you never hold a person accountable if you only care about pandering to them. And the majority of these cats pander to women because women actually pay more money when it comes to, especially this conscious shit. Women are sponsoring these pandering dudes because a lot of them just want you to say something that makes them feel good.
If you don't know, don't go over there. That's all he's about to suggest. If you don't know nobody, don't go over there. You don't want to go into a South Sider neighborhood and don't know nobody because you stick out like a sore thumb. If you can't speak no Spanish, they gonna be, for one, because they could give us the pass, like, oh, the Montano or, son. And then they go, then what you over here for? And you come to get one of our
I'm coming to get some tacos.
We don't give a
I want some tacos. Like, I'm chilling.
Be tripping, bro. We're tribal as a
yeah,
people.
Yeah, y'all be tripping. Even Glasses Malone came on the show, mm-hmm. bro. And he said, yeah, if a nigga just in the neighborhood just walking down the block.
You want to know.
Yo,
what are you here for?
What you over here for? If you in the store getting food, why you getting food over here? Why you eating this food?
And Glasses a watch, baby. You know what I'm saying?
But he can watch. I asked him the same thing, but so a nigga can't just be walking down the block.
No.
He said the same thing. Have y'all had traumatic experiences letting somebody walk down the block and saying that's never going to go down again? Or is that just the standard rule?
It's just what it is, man. I don't have the answer to
this. Because Glasses be in New York a lot. He's like, I get it. I being out here, you can walk places. I
get on the train here. I get on the train
for fun because I can. Yeah. Like, it's nice. it's a great experience, bro. I ain't gonna lie. Like, Glasses is nicer than me because I would say this. I hate walking because LA is not a walking place. Yeah, so if you walking, people talking. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you must be broke.
Mm-hmm.
But New York is good. And it's good cardio and all that. So I get why Glasses would want to hop on. I love the train. I'd be like, oh, this shit is adventure. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll be looking at the rats and shit. Like, this is crazy. Like, and then somebody playing some shit. I'm like, okay, it's an adventure.
And keep in mind, man, Raz Cash is 52 years old talking like this. You know, this is something that's been going on. We're about the same age talking like this. And his whole thing was in regards to L.A. is he doesn't even really want to go back. Like, he don't go back. Like, and I get it, because a lot of times you leave your neighborhood. It's unfortunate, man. A lot of times, man, we are in our neighborhoods and communities. There is a real, real underlying thing that we don't talk about. And one of the biggest things is we don't talk about the hatred we have for ourselves and each other. And that's one of the biggest cons in terms of like political education and so forth. Because if you think about it, a lot of people say, man, when you get famous or whatever, there's always somebody in the crowd that's mad about what you're doing. And they're jealous, they're envious, and they're looking to do harm to you. We don't think about it. We don't talk about it. Enough. But then we complain when those people don't come home anymore. But those people who want you to come home, they never protect you. They don't keep you safe. We don't have a collective consciousness about the promotion of nation building. Hell, we can't even decide if we're all part of a nation. It's funny because I saw a reputable fellow, I'm not going to say his name, but he was speaking about the effectiveness of the Willie Lynch speech, allegedly done in Lynchburg, Virginia in 1712. And the majority of people I know have at least heard about the Willie Lynch speech. So let me just pull it up real quick, because I wanna go over it, and I wanna do it verbatim, so y'all understand y'all understand what the Willie Lynch speech said. Hold tight. And sorry, my allergies are kicking in. I got these damn kittens. They don't know how to sit their asses still. they really don't. They don't know how to sit still, man. And so, so here's the Willie Lynch speech. Jesus Christ, did they make the font any smaller? Jesus.
Let me see if I can make the, you know, because eyes ain't what they used to be, and they got the most horrific font. So y'all gonna have to excuse me if I sound crazy over here. All right. So the Willie Lynch speech goes like this, and keep in mind he was talking to the men, because at the time we're talking about in this particular country they didn't even have the Constitution yet. All right. So, greetings, gentlemen. I greet you here on the bank of the James River in the year of our Lord, 1712. First, I shall thank you, the gentlemen of the colony of Virginia. That's right, it was colonies. It wasn't even a state yet. For bringing me here. I am here to help you solve some of your problems with slaves. Your invitation reached me on my modest plantation in the West Indies, where I have experimented with some of the newest and still oldest methods for the control of slaves. Ancient Rome would envy us if my program is implemented. You're talking about the Roman Empire, all right? As our boat sailed south on the James River, named for the illustrious king whose version of the Bible we cherish, I saw enough to know that your problem is not unique. While Rome used cords of woods as crosses for standing human bodies along the highways in great numbers, you here are using the trees and ropes on occasion. I caught the whiff of a dead slave hanging from the tree a couple miles back. You're not only losing valuable stock by the hangings, you're also having uprisings, slaves are running away. Your crops are sometimes left in the fields too long for the maximum profit. And you suffer the occasional fires. Your animals are killed. Gentlemen, you know what your problem are. You know what your problems are. I do not need to elaborate. I am not here to enumerate your problems. I am here to introduce to you a method of solving them. In my bag here, I have a foolproof method for controlling your black slaves. I guarantee every one of you that, if installed correctly, it will control the slaves for at least 300 years. My method is simple. Any member of your family or your overseer can use it. I have outlined a number of differences amongst the slaves, and I take these differences and make them bigger. I use fear, distrust, envy for the control purposes. Excuse me. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple little list of differences and think about them. On the top of my list is age, but if there's only one, it is only there because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. There's intelligence, size, sex, sizes of plantations, status on plantations, attitudes of owners, whether the slaves live in the valley, on the hill, east, west, north, or south. Have fine hair, coarse hair, or tall or short. Now that you have a list of the differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall ensure you that your distrust, that distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation, and respect or admiration. The black slave, after receiving this indoctrination, so carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. Don't forget, you must pitch the old black male against the young black male, the young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves, and the light-skinned slaves versus the dark-skinned slaves. You must use the female versus the male and the male versus the female. You must also have white servants and overseers who distrust all blacks. But this is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. They must love, respect, and trust only us, gentlemen. Gentlemen, these kits are keys to your control. Use them. Have your wives and children use them. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful. Thank you, gentlemen. That is the Willie Lynch speech. And whether or not people believe is real, the concepts are real. And then you see the way that the males and the females are separated. And I, for one, have been, for the longest, I have been on Brothers to get their lives straight, focused in working on being the best version of ourselves, to live in purpose, to carry ourselves with integrity in a dignified manner, to show ourselves respect and self-respect. But it also comes at a cost if we are trying to co-mingle with our counterparts who do not see themselves in that light, who pass up accountability because they don't like the shame that comes with it, that spew or live in the carnal nature of society when there's no regulations, when there's no rules or boundaries. And they say, you just want to control us. No, this is not about control per se. This is about being able to protect a community. But you cannot protect a community that you cannot control. And so, gentlemen, you have your precipice is upon us. I was going to do a story today. I'll cover it next week about this economy is causing a lot of friction, a lot more pain than usual. And these are behaviors that were there on the surface, but they're happening more and more. There was just a situation in Los Angeles where a table of women went to a restaurant and ended up getting into a fisticuffs fight at the table over the bill, in which five of the patrons at that table were stabbed. And the tragic irony behind that is some of the ones that were doing the stabbing and those who got stabbed, they were all related. They were all blood related. So, gentlemen, we have to talk about these things because in the economy to come, there are going to be some harsh realities that we have to face. So, you know, we talk about I really just clips just to scrape the surface of political education. But to be politically educated is to know your place in the world and the politics that surround you and your environment and community. So we're going to dive more into that in days to come. But until then, gentlemen, as I always say, watch yourself, you know, always mind your six and war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.